Time for our regular monthly catch-up with RNIB's campaigns team. Ross and Shamin are with us, and we've got a few topics to discuss with you today, and of course we'll give you contact details later if you want to find out more about those, or if you have any questions you'd like to chat to the campaigns team about. Ross?
Yep, as ever, been a very busy month. We're going to be hearing from Max Sood, who is our regional campaigns officer for Yorkshire and the Humber, and also Pete, who's a volunteer campaigner, and they're going to be recapping a recent guided walk that took place in Leeds. And we're also going to hear from Tom Skelton, who is our policy officer at Accessible Voting. And Tom is just going to give an update on some work that's been going on in the context of upcoming local elections.
Thanks very much, Ross. Max Sood, tell us about the walk in Leeds.
We did a guided walk with a construction management design consultancy engineer company called ACOM. They are an international company and they do a lot of design work across the UK with local authorities. And they're involved in a lot of the design, the planning, construction work that we see on our streets. So we worked with a group of six people, a consultant, an engineer, and then the others were graduate trainees and apprentices. And I was just really pleased to see that, because I think as well as the consultant and the engineers who are working on current schemes at the moment, we've also got trainees and apprentices coming early on in their career, which means that they're able to understand the impact that sight loss has on somebody's ability to navigate the built environment. And they take that with them through their career, hopefully, wherever they go. So the guided walk itself is split into three parts. The first part, we introduce the guided walk and we talk to the participants about sight loss itself, the main eye conditions. We go through canes and the types of canes that are used and how people navigate the built environment. The second part, or the middle part, is we take them out onto the street, get them used to using the sim specs and the canes, and then we do a route that we've pre-identified, you know, looked at sort of specific issues on that route. And that's what we did in Leeds, and we came across some really interesting points. And we were able to talk to the participants about all these issues and what they've probably learned on their courses on modules. It brought it all to life for them and they understood it more, I think, is what some of the feedback we had.
Pete, was there a particular reason you chose Leeds? Is there a lot of work there? I'm sure, you know, as Max had said, we'll be used to these in all areas, but were there particular issues in your area?
In all these walks, without exception so far, we've always tried where we can to take these folk out into an area that is familiar to them. They believe they can do it with their eyes shut until they try it with their glasses on and a cane. It was an eye-opener for them. The very first obstacle we came up against was tactile paving outside their own office that took them into roadway, which was very quiet, I should point out, very safe. But it didn't have a corresponding crossing onto the side of pavement. You're aiming for something that you're not going to actually reach. Then we got them following building lines out onto main road. They came across a couple of simple obstacles on that, the likes of a lamppost, for instance, where you wouldn't expect it to be. And I always make a point of asking them to work out as best they can what any obstacle might be, rather than me tell them. Because there's nobody follows me round telling me what obstacles are. I've had to do this all my life. I don't know any different. Then when we got onto main road, we came to a raised crossing, a continuous footpath, which made sense if you looked at it on a drawing, but they pointed out, not us, said it's in wrong position because it is continuous and it's running parallel and adjacent to a cycle lane. But it should be set back where people actually cross the road where it's narrower. And then we carried on. We saw some really good things like tapping rails on Harris fencing that's put up to prevent people, all people that is, not just disabled folk, from wandering onto building sites or falling into roadworks and et cetera, et cetera. We pointed out that could be improved possibly by a bit of high visibility tape, something just to make it more obvious that it's fencing and to walk away from it, and then found that brilliant new crossing, 90 degrees out of where it should have been parallel with the pavement, and it was at 90 degrees to it, which implies that you're going to cross the road to your right, which would be physically impossible. Well, we didn't actually have to describe that to them. Every last one of them saw it, that glaring error. And it was great that they saw it. As I know I'm repeating myself, but it's fantastic when they pick up the faults, the problems, and we don't have to say it.
Max said some really interesting points there. You know, and these are everyday things that these guys are designing. They're perhaps not there when the things are actually being put in place, though. I'm sure you would agree it's be good to get more of these around the UK, get more of these designers out and about, as well as probably the, you know, the guys who are building it as well.
I think, Alan, one of the things that I would say is that wherever you are, the obstacles, the issues that blind partially sighted people face as they're trying to navigate the built environment are the same. So we need to get that communication out there right across the country, really. You know, working with firms like ACOM enables us to do that. I mean, I think they found it so useful that even though we started with one team in Salford, they said how good it was to their other teams in other parts of the country, and we started getting requests from other parts of the country to do the walk with them. And the Leeds team have asked us to do another one as well with more of their staff there. And I was talking to a highways and transport engineer from the council, who did say that they were really pleased that we were doing it with ACOM, but also, you know, they'd really like it if we could do it with other consultancies that they worked with as well, because that helped their conversations, because they would commission the work out to these companies, and often accessibility is a point that becomes an area that they have to debate. But if the consultancies are already on board through the guided walks with these types of things, then it makes the process smoother, easier, and we get a more accessible design infrastructure at the end of it all. So
thanks, Maxud and Pete. Next, we're going to hear from RNIB's Policy Officer for Accessible Voting, Tom, who is going to give an update on some accessible voting work that's been going on in the context of the upcoming local elections in May.
Quite an important one, this. Of course, a general election on the horizon, and of course, local elections as well. I suppose when it comes to accessible voting, it's been a bit of a battle for some time now, hasn't it, Tom?
Yes, definitely. RNIB has been working for many years on trying to make voting more accessible, working with local authorities, central government, the Electoral Commission, on trialling various different solutions and trying to make the process more comfortable, independent and secret for blind and partially sighted voters. But as you say, it's an ongoing process.
We had, you know, things like the tactile voting device, which kind of helps you to find the numbers, the boxes to put the crosses in. There are, you know, possibilities for audio to play, you know, the candidates list and things like that. But I suppose it even goes back to getting your polling card through the door. How do you get to the polling station and the different options that are there? I suppose things are getting there slowly, but, you know, it's still a lot of work to do. And, you know, with elections on the horizon, it's even more important than ever.
So recently, we actually undertook a trial of various different accessible voting solutions. And the report from that trial is going to come out next month. So we're hoping through this data and research that we've gathered through the trial, we're hoping to increase the number of different accessible voting solutions available across the UK. And to also increase the knowledge of blind and partially sighted people about what they're entitled to, the different solutions, because obviously different solutions will work better for different people, and most importantly, to increase their availability, as well as improving the training of polling station staff so that they know how to support a voter in the different ways that would help them to vote independently and in secret.
We also have things now, Tom, like, you know, ID for certain elections, that there's different ways you can vote, you know, by post, by proxy, that there's a lot to take in probably for some people, especially those who are perhaps new to voting and blind or partially sighted.
In terms of the experience at polling stations, from our our previous surveys, we actually found that nearly half of blind and partially sighted voters surveyed were not satisfied with their experience of voting at the polling station. And it's still 63% of blind and partially sighted people vote in person at a polling station, as opposed to 37% doing it by postal or by proxy. And so it's vital to improve that experience, because only one in five of blind and partially sighted voters that we've spoken to said that they can vote independently and in secret. And as you say, the voter ID, 13% of blind and partially sighted voters do not have any form of acceptable photo ID. And you can apply for this voter authority certificate, which is available for anyone who doesn't have photo ID. But the accessibility of the application process is not always straightforward. And one thing I want to stress as well is that if someone doesn't have photo ID and wants to apply for a voter authority certificate, they don't have to have an election coming up. They can apply for one for any time, and they can last indefinitely. But you have to contact your local authority to apply for one.
As you say, Tom, your feedback is vital for the work that's done in the research and campaigning for change, of course. Do you want to still hear from people after the local elections on the 2nd of May?
Yeah, definitely. We are working with a few local authorities to introduce as many different accessible voting solutions and to trial them at these elections. And so we'd love to hear from blind and partially sighted voters about their experiences on polling day. And we'd love to hear as well about experiences in terms of voter ID and how the reasonable adjustments that each individual voter requires were handled and met, and whether you were able to vote as secretly and independently as possible.
Thanks so much, Tom. A lot to take in there for us. Now, Shameen, you've got some contact details for us if people want to find out more about some of the topics which we've been discussing, or indeed if they want to chat to you guys about anything around campaigning or even getting involved.
People can email us at campaigns@rnib.org.uk, or you can call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. You can also find news items at rnib.org.uk/news, and you can filter the items by topic if you filter it by campaigning. And then lastly, you can follow us on Twitter, now known as X, and our handle is @RNIB_campaigns, and we post lots of regular updates there as well. And there's still time to sign our out of sight petition, which we currently almost have 15,000 signatures on. So yeah, please do, if you haven't already signed it, pop your name on that.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, guys. Another packed one for us. We'll be back with you next month for more from the campaigns team. But for now, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.